This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we're focusing on the ever-changing treatment landscape for cancers of the hematological system. This series is supported by educational grants from Servier Pharmaceuticals, LLC, and Takeda, who have had no influence on the content or choice of faculty. If you'd like to check out any of the publications that we mention in this episode, there's references and links for these in the episode notes. We're your hosts, Hannah Wilgar
and Andre Grasso. Last week, we looked at a rare blood disorder, myelodysplastic syndrome, or MDS, and explored current guidelines and expert recommendations for its treatment. Today, we're looking towards the future, focusing on novel treatments under investigation in this disease area.
To answer our questions on this topic, we've invited Dr. Amer Zeidan, Associate Professor of Internal Medicine, Hematology at the Yale University School of Medicine. But first, we're going to spend a few minutes considering some example novel therapies in this space. If you'd prefer to skip ahead to the interview, do feel free to do so at the 5-minute mark. As we discussed in our last episode, ESMO and NCCN guidelines recommend treating high-risk MDS patients in order to lower their chance of developing acute myeloid leukemia. Strategies include allogeneic stem cell therapy, hypomethylating agents, or HMAs, and chemotherapy. For lower-risk MDS patients, treatment strategies focus more on managing the symptoms of their cytopenias, and options include erythropoiesis-stimulating agents, or ESAs, lenalidomide, granulocyte colony-stimulating factors, anti-thymocyte globulin, and short-term antibiotics. Red blood cell transplants also form part of the best supportive care for refractory or frail patients.
But the treatment landscape for these patients is changing. Our understanding of the disease has improved drastically in the recent years, and as summarized by Swoboda and colleagues, novel therapies are being developed at a rate never seen to date. In particular, large-scale gene sequencing, a better understanding of MDS morphology and epigenetics, and immune-based research have provided a backbone for developing novel targeted therapies and immunotherapies.
For example, just a few months ago, luspatercept was approved by the EMA for the treatment of transfusion-dependent anemia in a subclass of lower-risk MDS patients with a specific red blood cell morphology known as MDS with ringed sideroblasts. Luspatercept is a targeted therapy that traps the ligands of the TGF-beta superfamily of proteins, which are otherwise involved in inhibiting red blood cell development. In the recent Phase 3 MEDALIST trial comparing luspatercept and best supportive care to placebo plus best supportive care, luspatercept was shown to reduce the severity of anemia in transfusion-dependent patients who were refractory to or unlikely to respond to ESAs. In the trial, 38% of patients achieved transfusion independence compared to just 13.2% of patients on placebo.
Pevonedistat is another experimental drug that is being evaluated in MDS, as well as AML and other liquid cancers. As summarized by Sword and colleagues in 2018, this is a first-in-class inhibitor of the NEDD8 activating enzyme, or NAE, which is involved in cell functions such as cell division. A Phase 2 study was recently presented at ASCO 2020 by Dr. Lionel Addis, which evaluated pevonedistat in high-risk MDS patients who are ineligible for transplant or intensive induction chemotherapy. The study observed significantly longer event-free survival for those who received pevonedistat and azacitidine compared to azacitidine alone, leading the FDA to grant pevonedistat breakthrough designation to accelerate its development and regulatory review.
Another targeted therapy that showed positive results in its recent Phase 2 trial is imetelstat. Its target is telomerase, which otherwise may contribute to the failure of red blood cell development in MDS. Updated results for the open-label, single-arm IMerge trial were presented by Platz Becker and colleagues at the EHA Congress 2020, which demonstrated that in lower-risk MDS patients resistant to ESAs, 42% of patients treated with imetelstat met the primary endpoint of 8-week red blood cell transfusion independence.
B-cell lymphoma 2, also known as BCL2, is another personalized therapy target being explored in MDS. BCL2 was first discovered in lymphoma cells, and it plays a role in preventing apoptosis in cancer cells. According to Valston and Liu, it is overexpressed in some cases of MDS and may be the underlying cause of some therapy resistance. The BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax is currently being investigated in a phase 3 trial, and initial data suggests potential clinical efficacy when combined with the ipomethylating agent azacitidine.
HMAs are also being researched in other combinations or as novel agents themselves. For example, as described by Nahir Hamed, HMAs in combination with donor lymphocytes may lead to long-term remission following molecular or hematological relapse after allogeneic stem cell transplant. Cedazuridine is an orally administered fixed-dose combination of the HMAs decitabine and cytidine deaminase inhibitor, which was approved this year, and other new HMAs in late-phase clinical trials include CC486, which is an orally bioavailable form of azacitidine. In terms of immunotherapy, immune checkpoint inhibitors are a class of drugs that modulate the immune system to prevent immune suppression in the tumor microenvironment. They are already used in several tumor types, including lung and thyroid cancers. Results from an ongoing single-arm phase 2 study combining one of these drugs, nivolumab, with chemotherapy were published by Rivandi and colleagues at the end of last year. As a secondary endpoint, the median overall survival was 18 and a half months. With so many novel agents being developed for MDS patients, it's hard to know where to start, which agents will actually translate into benefit, and in what situations. To answer some of our questions on this topic, we've invited Dr. Amer Zeidan, Associate Professor of Internal Medicine, Hematology at the Yale University School of Medicine. Thank you for joining us today. So let's start with our first question. Which patients have the greatest need for novel therapeutic options in MDS?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think if you look at patients with higher risk myelodysplastic syndrome, generally their survival is much worse than patients with lower risk MDS. So I would say patients with higher risk MDS in general definitely are a significant area of unmet clinical need. The standard of care in those patients is allogeneic bone marrow transplant. However, most patients with MDS are older and they have multiple medical problems. So generally, very few number of patients with high-risk MDS will actually undergo transplant. So most patients are really treated on palliative intent therapy, which currently includes hypomethylating agents, azacitidine and decitabine. And most recently, we have an oral version of decitabine also approved in the U.S. So those are the three agents that are used in the frontline setting of high-risk MDS patients. Out of those patients who stop responding or have what we call hypomethylating agent failure, those patients are specifically have poor outcomes. The median survival is around 4 to 6 months, and it's a very difficult setting. Another setting is actually patients who have TP53 mutation. Those patients tend to do poorly even if they undergo bone marrow transplantation. Many of them would still relapse. So I think HMA failure and TP53 mutation are among the higher areas of unmet need. But in my view, all patients with high-risk MDS are a significant subset of patients with high unmet need because the outcomes with hypomethylating agents are not great. The complete response rate is in the range of 15%. And the median survival in real-life analysis that we and others have conducted is only 11 to 17 months. So we clearly need new therapy options to improve on those outcomes.
Great, thank you. So which of the therapies in development for MDS do you believe have the most significant safety and efficacy results?
Yeah, and I think this is actually, we are living in a very good times in terms of MDS, because MDS, if you look through the history of drug development, generally many of the drugs actually have not succeeded in the MDS space. And before the year 2020, if you look back, the last time we have an approval for MDS was in the year 2006. So we had azacitidine in 2004, lenalidomide 2005, and then decitabine in 2006. And I'm talking here about approvals in the US. And since 2006, we did not have any drug get approved until 2020, when we had an oral version of decitabine being approved. And we also have luspatercept, which is a transforming growth factor beta pathway ligand inhibitor. And this drug is approved for lower risk MDS. So we have two drugs approved in 1 year, but also we have a large number of agents that are undergoing advanced clinical trials. And I think this is very good news because we have many agents that are being studied. So if you look at the ongoing phase 3 trials, we have venetoclax, which is a BCL2 inhibitor, an oral agent that has been shown to improve outcomes in older patients who are unfit for intensive chemo with acute myeloid leukemia, in combination with azacitidine in a randomized trial, the VALE-A. Similarly, outcomes have been good in a phase 2 ongoing trial. So the drug is now being studied in a phase 3 trial, the Verona trial. Another drug that is being studied in a large phase 3 trial looking at overall survival is the TIM-3 inhibitor, sabatolimab. So this is a dual targeting agent that not only activates the immune system as an immune checkpoint activator, but also there's data to suggest that it targets the leukemia stem cells directly. So I think this is another exciting agent. You have also pivonidistat. So this is the first-in-class NID8 activating enzyme inhibitor. This works upstream of the proteasome, and it has already reported in phase 2 data some improvement in event-free survival and complete response rate in a subset analysis of patients with higher-risk MDS. That study looked at patients with MDS, CMML, and oligoplastic AML. There is a phase 3 trial that already accrued called the Panther trial, and we are waiting to see the results from that. In addition to these three drugs, we also have the anti-CD47 agent magrolimab, which has been shown in early phase study basically to be synergistic with azacitidine and had significant increase in responses, and there is evidence of clinical benefit. However, this is an early phase study, and still we don't have randomized data. However, based on that data, there's already a phase 3 trial that has been initiated, but this one is looking at complete response as the primary endpoint. It's called the ENHANCE study. And we have another agent called APR246. This is a TP53 refolding agent. So it's specifically being studied for patients who have TP53 mutations. And this drug has shown good data in two separate phase 2 studies in the US and France in combination with azacitidine, with complete response rate in the range of 40 to 50%. However, there is an ongoing phase 3 trial of this drug with azacitidine. However, we had a recent press release from the company announcing that the primary endpoint, which was complete response, was not met, although there was an increase in the complete response rate with the compo compared to the monotherapy. However, that did not reach the predefined statistical significance cutoff of the trial. So the trial is still ongoing. There will be additional data analysis, but clearly we need to see randomized data supporting that there is additional clinical benefit with the combination versus the monotherapy. And I think that also highlights the importance of randomized data in MDS, because we historically have seen several phase 1-2 studies showing high response rate, but once you go to the randomized setting, you don't see advantage with the combination over azacitidine monotherapy. So I think all of those phase 3 trials are great efforts. They are ongoing, and it sounds like the field might change significantly in the next few years.
Wonderful, thank you. So with so many drugs in development, how do you foresee these novel agents actually fitting into current MDS treatment protocols if approved? For example, what options will fall with high and low risk patients? Which will be used in combination with HMAs? And do you think care will be more personalized?
Yeah, and this is another great question. I do think that the treatment of MDS is definitely going to the direction of individualization or personalization. In the past, we used to use risk stratification just to get a sense about the risk status of the patient and then stratify them for bone marrow transplant if the patient is a candidate or not, or the use of hypomethylating agent therapy. But we generally did not use genetic markers to guide therapy, except in the case of deletion 5q, in which we use lenalidomide, and most recently in patients who have ring sideroblast or even SF3B1 mutation, who could get luspatercept if they have lower risk MDS. I think with the availability of some of the newer agents, of course, depending if they get approved, there will be different ways of looking at patients rather than giving the same treatment for everybody. So in addition to the genetic factors that you mentioned, for example, if the APR246 ends up being a successful drug and approved, that clearly would be going to patients who have TP53 mutated disease. The other agents, the other four agents are that we just discussed, the venetoclax, the sabatolimab, the magrolimab, and the pivonidistat. Those are not biomarker specific, but there could be subsets of patients that come from analysis of the clinical trials to identify patients who are more likely to respond. And I think that would be an ideal situation where you have a number of drugs available rather than one or two, because it's not only about individualization based on the specific genetics of the patient, but also on the specific circumstance. For example, venetoclax can cause myelosuppression, so it might require a patient who is relatively younger and healthier. An older patient might not necessarily tolerate that. Some of the other agents might not add to the myelosuppression, such as sabatolimab or pivonidistat. Some of the agents like venetoclax are oral, and those could be easier for some patients. Other are intravenous. Some are given once every 3 weeks. Some are more frequent. So I think some of those factors are all going to play in. And I think another important layer to add to all of this is for high-risk MDS, of course, all of those are being studied in combination with hypomethylating agents. And most of the pivotal studies, the phase 3 studies, are in combination with injectable agents, which usually is subcutaneous or intravenous azacitidine. However, the availability of oral decitabine, which is already approved in the U.S., and potentially oral azacitidine, which is not approved for MDS, but is approved for maintenance of older patients with AML, those oral hypomethylating agents are probably going to become also combination partners. And in some cases, like potentially combinations with venetoclax could offer total oral therapy for patients with MDS, which I think would be a major improvement. But in any case, even if the partner drug is injectable, like pivonidistat, or whether it's sabatolimab or magrolimab, having an oral hypomethylating agent could make life easier, because coming for 5 to 7 days in a row is very challenging for many patients with MDS. Many of those patients are older. They don't have the same degree of social support as younger patients. They don't have someone to drive them back and forth and all of that. So I think being able to give the hypomethylating agents orally is probably over time going to replace the injectables.
Perfect. Thank you for that. So what advice would you give to our listeners when discussing future prospects with their MDS patients?
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting era in MDS after like a desert of, we used to call MDS like the graveyard of drugs, because many drugs would be tested and not result in, clinical improvements, and they would die. Now, following a revolution, what I would call a revolution in AML, where we had a similar situation until the year 2017, and then we had 9 drugs approved within the span of 3 to 4 years. It sounds we are heading in a direction in MDS where after all these years of no improvement, we had 2 drugs approved in 2020, the luspatercept and the oral decitabine. And as I mentioned, we have a large number of other drugs that are in advanced clinical trial development. And there are other agents besides the ones I mentioned that are, already approved, for example, in AML, like IDH inhibitors or FLT3 inhibitors. Those are also being studied in MDS, of course, for patients who have those mutations. And these tend to be somewhat rare in MDS. So I think it's very important for the physicians to stay on top of the data. And it will be somewhat, I think, challenging when a lot of data come at the same time and to try to compare, should I use this drug or that drug? So I think trying to stay on top of all the new data and being engaged is very important for all physicians who care for patients with MDS.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're really grateful for your insights.
Sure. It has been a pleasure. And feel free, if you have any questions, you can use my Twitter handle, Dr. _AmerZaidan, if you have any questions. And I hope we have great new drugs for our patients. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed today, please do subscribe and join us for our next episode. And if you have the time to leave us a review, we'd love to hear your feedback. If you want more, you can also find free accredited continuing medical education modules on our website, onkip.com, and you can find a link to these in the episode notes, so please do check it out. If you're a Twitter fan, our handle is @onkip. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.